This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
There's a good chance you're already familiar with sleep regression. The phenomenon which causes babies who were previously sleeping well to wake at frequent and unscheduled intervals is relatively common. Some parents can suffer serious physical and mental health impacts during the sleep regression, but that's probably because this is The Gargle. Welcome to The Gargle, the sonic glossy magazine to The Bugle's audio newspaper for visual world. All of the news, none of the politics. I am your host, Alice Fraser. Your guest editors for this week are Josh Gondelman and Eleanor Morton. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Alice.
Hello.
Can you tell what was inspiring me this week?
No, I feel like you did a nice job camouflaging kind of the personal inspirations.
No, but I think I've got that.
Oh, you do? Sleep regression.
I think I am. I think my parents have said that I do that, actually.
It's probably because you're having a developmental leap.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, you're going to acquire new skills.
Wait, because my dog has started doing that. Maybe she's going to talk soon.
At the time of recording, though, when this comes out, it will not be the time of recording anymore. That's how time works. It is Yom Kippur. So I just want to say for all of our listeners who do Yom Kippur, I hope you're atoning enough. If you'd like to maximize your atonement, or you've probably missed atoning for this year, we can talk about it, how to atone up for next year. Before we put our hands on each other's shoulders and enter the slightly creepy massage circle that is this week's stories, let's have a look at the front cover of the magazine. The front cover this week is philanthropistienne Mackenzie Scott still giving away $3 billion a year and shedding husbands at an increasing rate of knots. And the satirical cartoon this week is two comedians reading a paper about the Russia-Ukraine conflict saying, hey, did you know that Vladimir Zelensky was a comedian before he was a president? Which gives me hope that one day Vladimir Putin will try to assassinate me. That's how you know that you've made it as a comedian. It's just a Russian guy in the cafe subtly trying to psych you into choosing a slice of poisoned cheesecake. Treat yourself. You've had a hard week.
It used to be Johnny Carson calling you over to the couch. Now it's, Russian operatives putting a bag over your head.
Now it's time for our top story, Optimus Grimes news. Elon Musk has launched a friendly robot, which he says will not overwhelm humans or attack them in any way. Josh Gondelman, you've been a tech billionaire in the past. Can you unpack this story for us?
That's right. Yeah. Elon Musk says these robots are going to be a bigger part of his business than electric cars, and he wants to make humanoid robots, which... why do they have to look like people? That's just rubbing it in when they take over, right? Where it's just like, oh, they can wear our pants and stuff when they take over the world. But he said a friendly robot that's not dangerous. And I don't like that. The idea of a friendly robot to me is almost as unnerving as the idea of a hostile robot, because you can hurt a friend's feelings. I want a robot with the personality of a Scandinavian grandparent, just no emotion, instead of turning against the humans in an all-out war. At worst, they're going to passively, aggressively do our bidding super slowly, and that I can handle. So these robots are supposed to – they're supposed to do like monotonous but possibly dangerous jobs and then become more sophisticated, that they can be friends or even sexual partners for humans. – And that's like a real testament to Elon Musk's worldview that he's designing robots that he can sexually harass, that you can have an inappropriate workplace relationship with.
Well, I mean, the robot will sleep with you for an NFT of a horse.
Well, this is the scariest part to me. They showed the robot, right, this kind of clunky prototype, and like four people brought it out, and then they made it dance, and it was not an especially fluid dance. It was like, it was a little herky jerky, a little wooden, and I was like, that's how I dance. The technology is too good, too fast.
Oh yeah, you're not doing the robot. The robot's doing
the Josh. And I was like, I'm replaceable. I'd never felt that way before.
The prototype of the robot came out on stage and waved to the audience, did a little dance, but most of the footage of the robot was video footage of the robot carrying a box, watering plants, moving metal bars in the factory, a Tesla factory. And it just, I feel like that is a good move. It's like when he got the employee to throw a steel ball at the window of the Tesla truck to prove that disgruntled employees could damage your car, and it worked.
Yes.
It's a tricky thing, the robot thing, because, of course, these robots will be used to replace human employees, and then there'll be more people on TikTok. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
That's a problem. And then there's going to be robot influencers.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Heartbreakingly. Eleanor, how do you feel about this story?
I think everyone is giving Elon a lot more credit than he deserves. First of all, can I just say, I think the billionaire doth protest too much, because he keeps mentioning that they're not going to hurt us. And I'm like, oh, I wasn't thinking about that until you said that. It's like if you go to someone's for dinner and they're like, there's no shit in the food. And you're like, oh, I didn't think there was, but now I'm worried. Like, but I actually think I'm not very worried about these robots, even though that's a scary thing for him to say, because I think Elon is all talk and no trouser. He is a man whose entire personality is all about the optics and none about the technology. All he wants to live in the future, and he doesn't get that we're not there yet. So he's made this robot, which actually, first of all, I like that it walked like I used to walk when I was sneaking to get a biscuit out of the tin as a 10-year-old. The robot actually, most scientists were saying, well, it's actually not that good at most of the things we need it to be good at. So, yeah, maybe one day we can get it to do all this stuff. But I don't think it's going to replace anyone soon, unless, like, you could actually replace TikTokers, because I think the only thing it can do is dance. So picking stuff up, a lot of other very basic things that humans find super easy, actually robots apparently find really hard. So I don't know. I'm not as impressed as Elon wants me to be, I think. He keeps saying, I'll do this and I'll do this, and then overpromising, and then it never turns up. And I'm kind of like, I feel like you think you're Iron Man, but with none of the technology of Iron Man, because that is a film.
He was an inspiring guy, and part of what he's inspiring is that he's read a lot of science fiction, and he would like to be the people in the science fiction. I'm just not sure he knows who the goodies are in the science fiction. He's quite excited about things that maybe to you and I might read as a dystopian future. Uh-huh. Because he can envision himself as being the one in the nice glass palace ruling the robots.
right. That's who you relate to.
He never reads the end of the book where everyone uprises and gets rid of the guy in the glass palace.
Oh no, if it's dystopian enough, it still ends badly.
That's true.
The billionaires stay in charge. So maybe he's reading the super dystopian stuff and being like, refreshing. I just feel like when they always promise that robots will become a sexual partner, I feel like this is, and I don't cry this lightly. I'm not a big like, this is the patriarchy. This is the patriarchy, because when they promise that a robot will be a sex partner, they are talking about a heterosexual female sex partner to a male purchaser. They are not talking about a robot that can finger you comfortingly.
Can you imagine anything more terrifying as a woman than letting a machine near any of that? That is a horrible idea.
Well, I mean,
wait a minute. There's a whole genre.
Hey.
I feel like sex robot technology is actually further along than we'd like to admit in some arenas. Eleanor, you said earlier that he overpromises, and that's so funny to me, right? Like, Alice, you brought up, he was like, here's an unbreakable car. And it's like, who asked for an unbreakable car? Like, we all understand that cars break.
He kind of reminds me of P.T. Barnum a bit. It's like, He's like, here's a thing you never thought of and never wanted, but here it is, but it's not really there, but it's not real. But here's some money. And then I assume Hugh Jackman will eventually play him in a musical. So I would watch that too.
Yeah, so how the Boring Company is trying to deliver sort of underground tunnels for self-driving cars and all these sort of promises. And you think, are you trying to invent a bus?
Yes.
It's not like his companies don't do anything, right? Like, I think he overinflates like his own innovativeness, but you see when he walks on, right, he'll be like, electric cars, and we're like, got it. And he's like, and they drive themselves, and we're like, do they? And he's like, and nothing can break them. And you're like, well, that's not right. And he's like, and there's a new tunnel system through the center of the earth. And you're like, okay, you just like dreamed that.
I maintain that Grimes left Elon, or, you know, they have parted ways, sort of, because when they met, he told her, because she's obsessed with sci-fi, she loves Dune, he told her, I'm going to build a colony on Mars. And for some reason, Grimes went, he means next week. And it took her a couple of years. And she was like, I actually don't think he can do that yet. And then she's left. I fully believe that's what she thought.
It is important to have mad geniuses with visions of the future. It's just also important that they have ethical business standards.
And that they...
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, right. Like, you can look... You can have a mad scientist all day long, but yeah, let their lab workers, let the Igors of the world unionize.
Yeah. Here's the rule, Elon. I, as somebody who's genuinely torn 50-50 between admiring and being horrified by Elon Musk, I would say, Elon Musk, you're allowed to invent humanoid robots and replace all of your workers in all of your factories with humanoid robots. But then if they do achieve sentience, you have to pay them minimum wage. That's the deal.
Once they pass the Turing test, you need to hit them with tax info.
Your ad section now, because you can't be what you can't buy. And this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Swings at the Playground. Swings for when you want to be really gloriously conscious of the physics of motion, the geometry of curves, and the gravitational pull of the Earth, and then also need to fight a baby who refuses to stop appreciating the same things. And this episode of the podcast is brought to you by Gravel. If you're landscaping your ground and you want some ground to be right there, but not the ground that's there in real life, try buying Gravel. Gravel. Never forget to wear your shoes outdoors again. And this episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Second Person. The Second Person is a tricky person to write in, you think to yourself, beginning to write in the second person. You find yourself confused, which in itself is confusing because you're you. How hard is it to write as though you're you? But it is. How do you get to the point you're trying to make? Do you even remember? Oh yes, you think, pouring yourself half a glass of water. That was it. You're a character in an ad for half a glass of water. That's why you exist. You drink the water. You cease to exist.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And now it's time for your edible QR codes news. This is the news that they have now invented an edible QR code that if you scan it and then eat it, it shows you a video of the chef thanking you for eating it. I mean, look, I'll thank someone for eating me. No, we're not going there. Eleanor, can you unpack this story for us?
Yeah, well, it was a restaurant in Wales was the focus of this, and they've sort of reopened as a very high-tech gastro cuisine phenomenon where all the food is looks incredible, but you know, in, it's all presented in cubes and balls, and it's a lot of showmanship and smoke. And at the end of the meal, you can, while you eat your petit four, you can scan a QR code and then you can eat it, and you get to meet the chef who's made your meal, which you can also do in a normal restaurant by asking to do that. I feel like this kind of ties into the Elon story, because I think for me it's another thing where we've, what's the Jeff Goldblum quote? We never stop to think, not if we should, but why? Like, do we need, we don't really need a robot.
I think the Jeff Goldblum quote is, holy f***, that's a dinosaur.
It's more like a, holy f***. Very, very good Jeff Goldblum impersonator.
It's like he's on the podcast.
Guys, it's just me. Scotland's premium female Jeff Goldblum impersonator. I think it looks impressive. For me, food isn't something I need to be high tech. I much prefer, it is, you know, it's a novelty, I can see that. But also I think it's very unnecessary. I think, you know, once you've had that very fancy meal, will you ever go back? Is it going to be your favourite restaurant? Or is it going to be, oh, that was an experience we had once. I'd much rather go somewhere normal where they just make food. That sounds very like inverted snobbery of me, but I do think food is one of the few things that has really changed that much in history. And I think that's because it's quite good the way it is.
Josh?
Look, I think this is terrific. I first of all, Eleanor, fully on board. Because I'll eat whatever. You know what I mean? I'll eat like a hamburger bun with another hamburger bun on it. No hamburger. I don't care. I'm a slob. But I do love this. First of all, for too long, we've been giving our compliments to the chef, right? But it's time that the chef compliments us back. So I do think that it's nice that the chef will thank us for dinner, for eating their food that they've prepared. I also, it's not my favorite thing to eat, but I am so curious. And I'm always like, I'm the kind of asshole that this place appeals to. Like, I'm always interested if you put a plate in front of me and it's the skin of a blueberry with a raspberry stuffed inside it somehow, or like a cloud of vapor that they're like, that's the ghost of beef tartare and you have to inhale it before it evaporates. Yeah, I'll try that. I'm exactly the kind of jerk that loves to eat an expensive meal full of tiny little ornaments that leaves you hungry enough that you have to order a pizza that will meet you when you get home. That's like where I'm at.
I once went with my most blokey friend to like a raw vegan degustation. Mm-hmm. And about halfway through he went, it's all just dips in different shapes.
So I want to get to it. First of all, I think it's so funny that like a vegan restaurant is like hypothetically accessible in terms of food preferences to the most people, right? Like everyone who eats meat also eats not meat. But in reality, they're like, not for me. It is actually for the least number of people.
I heard the worst vegan pickup line the other day. It was American tourists in Venice, and one of them turned to the other one and said, yeah, he said he gets his he's a vegan, and he said he gets his B12 from eating pussy. Oh.
That's so funny. God, what that, I like this guy that's just like the aggro vegan that's just like, yeah, I mean, I eat some meat, you know what I'm saying, babe? It's
like, really vegan.
They make you now? Yeah. Yeah, Eddie Murphy's raw vegan. Oh. But I do love that they have a fancy vegetarian menu at this restaurant, Gem 42, that aspires to zero waste. I think that's like a really cool, like normalizing kind of like exceptional high-end delicious vegetarian food, I think is really neat. And zero waste, I think, is something to aspire to, right? We all make too much food waste and trash waste, but zero seems like too much. Like, the food just stays inside me till I die. Like, I think there should be some waste eventually. But that's, you know, maybe I'm old school like that.
I think it's zero waste because the food is only tiny and it's impossible for any of it to be wasted if you're going to try and not.
Right, no leftovers.
Yeah.
Zero leftovers.
I once went to a restaurant in Germany, in Berlin. I think it's a chain, actually, but I went to the one in Berlin. It's called Dunkel Restaurant, which means dark restaurant, and it's, you get served entirely in the dark, and you don't know what you're ordering. You kind of, you know, they tell you if it's vegetarian or not, but that's it, really. You just choose the things off the menu like they kind of give you a story about it, but you don't know what it is. And then you're served by visually impaired waiters, so they're not worried about the dark. They can navigate that. And it was just mad how much difference not seeing the food made to the taste. Like it just made it like 200% more interesting as a experience. So I totally get the need to fancy zhuzh things up, but you could just close your eyes and your spaghetti hoops can become a journey all of their own.
A totally dark restaurant in Germany does feel like they would be like, and that last course, your own parents. You just ate the flesh of your loved ones.
A sense of dread building around you as you eat your dessert. Enjoy.
Very Titus Andronicus. That's all the time that we have for our degustation news, because now it's time for your reviews. As you know, each week we ask our guest editors review something out of 5 stars. Josh, what have you brought in for us this week?
I'm going to review fantasy basketball. My fantasy basketball league that I'm in every year is starting back up. And as a man from New England, watching sports is already the only way I have access to the full spectrum of human emotion, which is a healthy trait that definitely isn't necessary to interrogate further. Fantasy basketball, however, provides me with too much feeling. There's the regret of forgetting to set my lineup on a given day and losing out on points. There's the anguish of losing at a sport that I'm not even actually playing. And then the double anguish of players that I root for in real life defeating my imaginary team. And that defeat feels extra personal. The victories feel extra ephemeral. It's a source of vastly more misery than joy year after year. And I will, of course, throw the $50 entry fee into a fire to participate in my usual league every season until I die, at the very slightest peer pressure, because I can't say no to things and I hate feeling excluded. So I'm going to give this 1.5 out of 5 stars for fantasy basketball.
1.5 out of 5 stars fantasy basketball. Eleanor, what have you brought in for us?
I just got back from a holiday in Sicily. It was very nice. And I have to say, I loved the Italian security at the airport, by which I mean the lack of security. It was, I'd say, the quickest I've ever been through anything in my life. They barely looked at anything I put in that on that conveyor belt. And it's all theatre anyway, so it's not as if I was any less safe than going through a 2-hour queue in Heathrow. I was through the other side. They've got amazing pastries and like fresh, like nice stuff, not just a WH Smith on the other side. You know, they got nice fresh shit. So Italian airports, I'm gonna give 5 out of 5.
Wow. 5 out of 5 for Italian. That's a real spectrum of reviews.
Very few jokes in that. I just loved it.
I would go on vacation to that airport.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. They were laid back. They were, and you know, Not Josh, not to demean your country, but you guys have the scariest airport
They're
security.
Horrendous. I hate it.
Terrifying.
You know, they always ask, like, why are you here and how much terrorism are you planning to commit?
Yeah.
And Italians, very much the opposite. In fact, the woman who I went through passport control to get into the country, she looked at me quite scarily, and I was like, oh, is she going to ask me a question? And then she stamped my thing and she went, you have beautiful hair. and I don't think you'd get that in America.
No, never. I mean, I don't get that anywhere I go. But I like that. I like to think that you're saying security theater. I like to think that Italian security theater is more of a commedia dell'arte.
Environment news now. A family has been investigated after ruining everything in, as we all know, a gender reveal party has gone wrong. They turned a waterfall blue in an attempt to tell people what the shape of their child's genitalia was and ended up destroying the universe. Eleanor, you're wearing a very lovely lilac. Can you unpack this story for us?
Thank you. I'm in my pastels today. So I believe it was in South America, is that right?
Yep, in Brazil.
Brazil, and it was a natural beauty spot, a lovely waterfall, and they decided they would dye it blue, which is funny because waterfalls are blue. and would you know, sticking a load of dye in a waterfall is not good for it or the environment. And everyone was pretty upset with them. And you know, I think every year, like the gender reveal stories, there was a wildfire one in California where they accidentally set a whole bit of forest on fire. Every year the stories about gender reveals get a little bit stupider and a little bit more apocalyptic. And, you know, I do wonder what's coming next. Is it going to be a nuclear bomb that's pink when it explodes, or some kind of tsunami? I think the thing I find strange about all gender reveal parties is the fact that the parents of this baby expect me to have any reaction at all to their child's genitals. You know, I'm gonna pretend to be delighted either way. It's gonna be the same reaction. Like, what do they want? Do they want me to, you know, they reveal that it's a boy, and I go, oh, that's a shame. I really want it to be a girl. You know, it's what's the end goal here? We're all just pretending to care.
When my mum presented my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, with twins, she said, the boy is worth 12 of the girl. So that was the exchange rate for the genders when I was born, according to my Hungarian grandmother. So wow. I don't think my mum ever forgave her for it. Also, she didn't mean it. She just said it because that's kind of the crazy thing that people said in the 1914s when she was being brought up.
At least you knew you were the least likely to be sold off.
Well, that's the thing, like, gender reveal parties would have made way more sense like 200 years ago than they do now, because then, you know, if it's a girl, you're like, oh shit, and if it's a boy, you're like, yes, and now it's, we're all meant to have the same reaction either way, so why didn't we have them then?
I did have a strong reaction to this story, which was intense relief, because I truly, this is my own point of view, but I had, until I saw that this happened in Brazil, I had thought that destroying the environment for gender reveal parties was a uniquely American phenomenon. And I was like, oh, thank God they do it other places too.
South America and North America.
Yeah, all the Americas. Look, I can't take any ownership for what happens in Brazil. Or, I mean, even outside of Brooklyn, really. That's all.
But you take responsibility for everything that happens inside Brooklyn.
That's true. All of it.
You're the man.
Machine politics, hip-hop. But the parties are always so tacky, right? It's like, let's take a marvel of nature and turn it into the color of a freshly cleaned toilet water because we saw a tiny dick on an ultrasound. And I guess in this case, though, I am glad that it was a boy, which I normally don't care about strangers' babies' gender at all, because a waterfall like running deep pink sounds less like a gender reveal party and more like one of the 10 plagues.
It is one of the rare times that a tiny penis is celebrated.
That's true. They're just like, let's have a party. We're going to invite friends over to talk about it, which is kind of Sex in the City.
That's all the time we have for Dick Talk News, because now it's time for our billionaire private gladiatorial contest news. This is the news that Mark Zuckerberg had what was essentially a private UFC event. He and a few Facebook friends booked out the entire stadium of UFC Vegas, didn't invite any media, and just had men punching each other in a ring in front of him. And somehow that seems, you would think that it would be less grotesque, but somehow more grotesque.
Vastly more.
The fewer people are watching.
Yes, at zero, right? Zero people watching, it's just a fist fight.
Yeah, that's the state of nature, I feel. I think we can all accept people kicking each other in the head if no one's watching.
Yeah, that just is, you know, maybe it's over a parking spot. I'm from Boston. These are things that happen. But I don't like this at all, just like a private spectacle. It feels very just before the fall of an empire to me. Like, I don't love the metaverse that Mark Zuckerberg is trying to create. I'm definitely against him having a private murderverse. I don't think he should have that. I guess he's recently, this is what I read, that he's recently a big Brazilian jiu-jitsu and MMA fan, which I don't like at all, because I don't like when these tech moguls get physically strong. Like, if you're gonna control all the money and information, we should at least have a real shot at beating the shit out of you if we have to take you in hand-to-hand combat. I really believe that sincerely. Like, I'm not trying to beat up Mark Zuckerberg, but if he runs at me, I don't want to be like, uh-oh. I want to be like, now's the time. Like, we can't let this guy develop a taste for blood. Now it's private UFC fights. Soon he'll be setting countries up to have nuclear war against each other for his entertainment. I do think this is the one way I feel like this would make sense. If he really wants to get into MMA and take these lessons, I think he should have to fight Elon Musk's humanoid robots.
If you're a billionaire, you should be allowed a cage fight if you're in the cage.
Yes.
That's the rules. You're not allowed to watch any sport of any kind unless you're doing it. That's the rules. I don't make the rules. I just make them up.
I actually find it quite refreshing that he's doing this in a way. I think this is more honest. This is what I picture men with too much money. This is what I assume they want to do. I think this is nicer in a way than building a robot army. Like, yeah, of course that's what stupid men with lots of money would do. Of course they would hire their own gladiators and fight it out like Roman emperors. And, you know, I just think that's a bit more traditional, a bit more classy in a way. It's like, yeah, I know at least five men who would do that if they had £1 billion. It's honest, you know, it's honest. And it kind of confirms that is what the goal of billionaires is, just to do what they want in the most sort of toxic masculinity way possible. And they're not, he's not trying to hide it. He's just saying, this is what I'm into, you know, a sort of fight club with glitter. I like that.
I mean, Dana White, who is the UFC guy, took a picture with Mark Zuckerberg saying what a privilege it was to have him watch men punch each other in a ring. And my favorite take on it was the internet take of the manosphere, who spent their entire time comparing how big Dana White's head is compared to how small Mark Zuckerberg's head is. It's just bring it back to phrenology, boys.
Yeah.
That's how you know you're a real man.
Mm-hmm. It's all about lobes. Crania.
There's a real pattern of billionaires, dictators, that kind of energy, being absolutely obsessed with fighting in their bodies, but not actually being any good at it. And I think they probably wouldn't be billionaires if they were. They would just be fit men.
Right. They'd have, you know, 100 grand in abs.
Yeah.
And that's all the time we have for this week's episode of the podcast. Now we're at the end of the magazine, flipping through the ads at the back. Have you got anything to plug, Josh?
I do. My stand-up special, People Pleaser, is still available. I believe it's for rent on Vimeo worldwide. If you're in the US, it's free for Prime subscribers. Speaking of swole billionaires. And I'm on tour all over the US and a little bit of Canada. This weekend I'm in Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Next weekend I'm out in Western Mass. JoshGondelman.com for details. I'm out. I'm going all over the country, West Coast, East Coast. So, like, please come out and see me if you enjoy me on this podcast.
And Eleanor, have you got anything to plug?
I am Eleanor Morton on all of the socials, and that's where I post silly videos. I am also doing the Weirdos Halloween show in London at the end of the month. It's going to be a very silly, spooky show, where our head honcho, Adam Lata, has put far too much time and effort into giving each individual audience member an envelope full of information for them. You know, if you buy a ticket, you'll get an envelope. It'll have a whole character arc for you. He spent so much time and money on this. It's a lot of fun. It's very silly. That's at the Museum of Comedy the last weekend of October.
The Museum of Comedy, that's where I filmed my special Kronos, which will be out soon and will be available first on my Patreon, patreon.com/AliceFraser. It's a one-stop shop for all of my stand-up specials, podcasts and blogs. You can find me there or at Alliterative, A-L-I-T-E-R-A-T-I-V-E on Twitter and Instagram. This is an Alice Fraser and Bugle podcast production. Your editor is Ped Hunter. Your executive producer is Chris Skinner. I'll talk to you again next week.
You can listen to other programs from The Bugle, including The Bugle, The Last Post, Tiny Revolutions, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.